Time to talk aches, pains, sprains, and strains and how to deal with them with our two guests, Lori Tyne Brody, Senior Physical Therapist at the UW Sports Medicine Center, and Bill Boisenault, Associate Professor at the UW Medical School. Really glad to have them back. They come by about once a month or so to talk with you and with me, and certainly if you have a question for them, you can give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234, or in Madison at 263-1890. Give us a call with your questions and comments. Lori, nice to have you back.
It's good to be back, and what a fabulous day. Why didn't we have this day yesterday? That's what I would know.
Well,
on Sunday.
It wasn't bad where I was. Bill, how about you?
No, it was pretty nice, actually. Lori, where were you?
I was at my house. It rained all morning.
We were in Watertown and visiting my father-in-law and mother-in-law, and so... And Bill, you were
I was over
further
Milwaukee
east,
on
yeah.
Day as well, yeah.
Maybe it was just our own little black rain cloud, like Eeyore, raining over our house in Mount Horeb. It did get nice at the end of the day, though, when we got outside and did some stuff. And actually, my husband went to one of the local nurseries on Saturday and said the lines were out the door. So I have a feeling lots of people were planting this weekend.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Lots of hole digging, gardening, raking, tree trimming, things like that. So
there'll be some aches and pains for sure.
There'll be some phone calls this morning.
Right. A few blisters, a few aches and pains. And
You know, you mentioned trimming. I trimmed a tree on our property, and it was one of those deals where I had to kind of stretch and reach, and it was a fairly big limb, probably mm-hmm. about as big around as my leg. And mm-hmm. I tell you what, I had a sore arm after that for a few weeks.
Oh yeah, what were you using to trim it?
Not the sharpest saw,
okay.
And I'm not the sharpest tack.
A butter knife sounds
yeah, exactly. Well, geez, I guess that'd be my first suggestion. We have a pole saw at our place, which is, as you can imagine, it's a small saw on the end of a very long pole, and you have this mechanism of kind of a chain thing that you pull.
Yeah, we got one of those too. Yeah.
And boy... That'll make your back hurt. I mean, such a long lever arm. And then you're trying to hold it with one hand in position, and you're pulling this with the other hand.
Yeah, it's awkward.
Yeah.
And then it slides out of the little slot.
It slides out. Right, exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Always.
My husband's shoulder hurts and his back hurts whenever he does it. He finally got an electric one, you know, or a gas-powered one.
Gas-powered one.
Yeah, which is better, but the thing is still relatively unwieldy and heavy. It's such a long lever arm that it's tough.
Well, tell you what, Kathy in Madison was probably out and among us over the weekend. Kathy, hi.
Hi.
What's on your mind today?
Well, I need to do some exercises, abdominal exercises like crunches and so forth, but I have lower back pain. So I was wondering if they had some good suggestions.
Lower back pain.
Well, there are lots of ways to strengthen the abdominals, and the abdominal muscles are certainly tied into the health of our low back area, low back region. Crunches generally are okay, meaning if you only come up enough so your shoulder blades are off the floor as opposed to coming all the way up.
Mm-hmm.
If you come all the way up, that puts more load on your back than is necessary, and you end up strengthening more at your hips and not so much your abdominal muscles.
Hurts.
Right. So when we talk more about doing a curl up, when you're lying on your back, your hips and knees should be bent as opposed to your legs straight out. You shouldn't be hooking your legs under a piece of furniture or anything. And you should kind of set your abdominals first, kind of pull in your belly button down toward the floor, and then curl your head up and then your shoulders up off the floor. And come up just far enough your shoulder blades are off. Hold for a couple of counts and then lower yourself back down slowly. If you do it that way, you're recruiting the parts of the abdominals that you really want to focus. You can come straight up. You can come angled a little bit toward one knee and then the other knee to pull in your obliques, another component of your abdominals a little bit as well.
What about my hands? Should I put them behind my head?
Well, it depends. It depends how easy or difficult it is to lift your head and shoulders up off the floor. Uh-huh. If it's difficult, if you're really straining, then just fold your arms across your chest.
Okay.
And then as that gets easier, then move your hands up towards your head.
Yeah, usually my neck gets sore.
Yeah. Well, in that case, then what you can do, if it's difficult to do the curl up the way I described, you can uh-huh. have one hand supporting your head, other hand across your chest.
Okay.
And then when that gets easy, then have both hands underneath your head. But just make sure you don't crank on your head. Don't pull on your head hard to come up. Just support it.
Okay. What about that ball, doing sit-ups, leaning on those exercise balls?
Yeah, or using a ball can be another good way to advance, but it's a pretty advanced way to start.
Okay.
You know, if you're lying on your back over the ball and then you curl up, it's easy to hyperextend your back to get some stability in order for you to lift your head and shoulders up.
Okay, so I won't try that first.
Yeah, not first, but that would be a good thing to progress to.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much for calling. And how long would you, is this something a person should just do every day or?
Well, I don't know if it has to be every day, but I think getting into a routine of, again, kind of a combination of some flexibility, some stretching, and some core strengthening, which is includes your abdominal muscles, is I don't know if it has to be 7 days a week, but I think incorporate it into a routine where you are physically active for at least 4 or 5 days a week, including some conditioning activity, too.
Mm-hmm. Makes good sense. Thanks, Kathy. Let's go to Jim in Madison next. Jim, hello to you.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I've had chronic back pain for 3 or 4 years. I was originally diagnosed with a couple of bulging discs and some bone spurs, and I had a radio frequency denervation to alleviate the pain, and that did very well and lasted for about 6 months, and then just recently came back with a band, and I since saw a specialist who now has diagnosed it as moderate arthritis, and so next week about this time I'll be beginning physical therapy and trying to keep the pain down with pain medication, but they're advising me that it may take a year or two of physical therapy, and I was just wondering, what's the prognosis for relieving that kind of chronic situation using physical therapy?
Well, generally, the prognosis is good. Physical therapy will help most people to a degree. The question is it going to take your pain away 100% or not?
Mm-hmm.
The goal, for many of the folks I see, 100% pain relief isn't necessarily a reasonable goal, considering how long they've had it and what kind of arthritic changes they have had. But the goal is to get the pain under relief to where you're functioning. You're doing your daily activities, and you're controlling the back pain. And that typically does not take a year of physical therapy straight. Generally, with your history, with the 3-4 years, I mean, that's not unusual for the folks that I've seen. I would probably see you a couple times a week for the first 2 or 3 weeks and then start spreading out the visits. But much of it is what they will be giving you to do on your own.
Okay.
Whether it's from exercise standpoint, trying to modify how you lift, how you sit, how you bend. You know, they'll talk to you about what your typical day is like, both for work and leisure. And there may need to be some modifications done to minimize the stress on your back.
Okay.
But flexibility through your hips is really important, as well as some core trunk stabilization strengthening. But, you know, I'd go in with a good attitude and being optimistic.
Okay, I intend to do that. Thanks very much.
Thanks.
Good luck.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Aches, pains, sprains, and strains on our minds today with Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault. If you'd like to join in, we have some open lines. We'll get you on pretty fast at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Or if you're in the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. Give us a call with your questions and comments. What is normally the prognosis for someone with a herniated disc?
Well, the disc is acts like a spacer in our spine, kind of separates the bony parts, elements of our spine, the vertebra. It absorbs shock and allows movement. And the outer part of the disc is a very strong ligament. It's very important for adding stability to the back. And then the inside is like a gel-like structure. If that outer ligament truly ruptures, then the person most likely is going to have at least some degenerative changes. Arthritic changes occur over time. The question is that herniation pushing on a nerve or not? And that's where people can get into trouble.
Mm.
And they can start losing sensation and start losing strength. And that happens when that ligament gets weak and or ruptures. And those folks are left probably with more leg pain than back pain. And those are the folks that, if anybody needs surgery out there, generally they're the ones who end up needing surgery at times.
Okay.
So people can recover from a herniated disc, and actually many people do. It's just a matter of the herniated part of the disc related to that nerve root.
Jim and Ladysmith, it's your turn. Hi, Jim.
How you doing? I'm calling today about a bursitis in your shoulder. How
okay.
How do you get rid of that?
Well, the first step is to figure out what caused it in the first place, because even if you get rid of the bursitis but you keep on doing whatever it caused it in the first place, it's just going to come back again. So a bursitis is typically an overuse problem. The arm, shoulder's been used too much, usually in an overhead position. So the first thing is figuring out what caused it and eliminating that.
Okay.
And then secondly, after that, usually some anti-inflammatory medications, if it is a true bursitis, it's an inflammation in the bursa, some icing in the area to help with the swelling, as well as some strengthening exercises for the rotator cuff, the muscle that lies right adjacent to the bursa, are usually helpful in getting rid of the bursitis. But the first thing is figuring out why you have it in the first place.
All right,
thank you.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling. And on to Jim in La Crosse. Hi, Jim.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
Last August, I had surgery I tore my bicep tendon in July at the elbow. And I went through the surgery, you know, the cast and the rehab and everything. Went back to work last January. And every now and then, when I do some lifting, I'll get some serious cramping and shooting pains in my forearm, actually below the surgical area. Now, I'm just curious, is this something I'm going to have to put up with forever and ever, or is something else going on that I need to have looked at?
How has your forearm bothered you since the original injury?
Just after going back to work.
Okay. So.
And actually, there was a lag time. Probably, I hadn't had it hurt until a good 4 months after I went back to work.
Okay. And what kind of work do you do?
I'm a delivery driver.
Okay, so you're doing lots of lifting?
Yeah, but I'm conscious of it.
Okay.
Because I have, it's like 15% disability in that arm.
Okay.
So I'm conscious of the weight distribution.
Okay. All right. Well, one of the things that we look for when somebody comes in with that kind of a complaint is how you've compensated for the original injury. So it may be that you're lacking sufficient strength in the bicep and the shoulder muscles on that arm, and you're compensating by using your forearm.
Did you
go to physical therapy after your surgery?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
I figured as much. And are you continuing on a maintenance program?
The strengthening band.
Yeah.
Yeah, those things, yes.
Okay. Well, it may be time to go back just for a visit and retool your program a little bit and look and see if there's something else going on that needs to be addressed. It's unlikely that there's any kind of significant problem that was overlooked, but it's more likely a change in how you move. So seeing somebody with expertise in occupational physical therapy who can look at your work and how you do your work and how you move and lift to see if they can pick up on some subtle compensations that are causing this new problem.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And Mike and Amory, your turn. Hi, Mike.
Good morning.
Morning.
Speaking of morning, my problem is when I first wake up in the morning, when I'm still in bed, I just naturally stretch my muscles just very, very hard, in fact. I don't know why I do that, but when I do stretch, the muscles in my back spasm, especially right above my kidneys, and it's very painful. Sometimes I have to then go into like a fetal position to relieve the pain, the muscle pain. It doesn't happen every morning, but I'd say maybe 3 or 4 mornings out of the week. I wake up in the morning and stretch, and then I get the pain. But otherwise, during the day, I'm fine. So what could that possibly be?
Well, the good news is you don't have anything that's acutely inflamed or any tissue that's damaged, or else you wouldn't feel fine the rest of the day, and you would have this kind of sensation every single morning. A couple things come to mind is potentially either the sleeping position as well as maybe the mattress. That may put your back in a position that allows it to stiffen up a little bit, and then when you stretch too aggressively, you just don't give the muscles a chance to wake up or to warm up at all. When you stretch hard, is it because you get a sense that you are really tight and stiff in the back and the legs, or is it just kind of a habit?
Yeah, normally I'm stiff. I'm otherwise in good health. I'm 60 years old.
Okay.
I walk about a mile a day.
Okay.
And I'm otherwise in good health. It's just the first thing in the morning when I stretch, I have that pain in my back. But otherwise, throughout the day, I'm fine.
Okay. Hmm. What position do you typically wake up in, Mike?
Typically on my right-hand side, kind of sort of in a fetal position.
Okay. All right. Well, side lying generally is a pretty good position to sleep in terms of our back. It puts minimal stress on our back.
Uh-huh.
Mattress that you're on, is it super hard? Is it soft?
No, I'd say it's medium, probably medium to medium firm.
Okay. All right. You know, I mean, I'm kind of shooting straws here a little bit, but if the mattress can be too hard and it can also be too soft.
Uh-huh.
If it's too hard, sometimes putting a mattress pad on top can really help decrease some stiffness that people have in their back or their shoulders or their hips. If it's too soft and you sink into the bed, then also it's a reason why people can wake up a little stiff in the morning.
Uh-huh.
You know, you could try if you have either maybe a piece of plywood that you can stick between your mattress and your box springs and just firm it up a little bit and see if that helps.
Okay.
And if not, if you can maybe get a mattress pad to put on top and soften it up a bit and see if that helps.
Okay, yeah. If anything, I'd say it's too firm, so I probably need to soften it up some.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
You know, the other thing is, you know, you wake up and you say you're stretching hard, so like you're stretching your arms and legs out straight overhead.
Yeah.
You know, you're probably not really stretching your muscles, but you're probably contracting your muscles.
Oh, okay.
And they haven't had sufficient time to warm up. All the blood when you're sleeping is going to your brain and your internal organs just to maintain basic low-level function while you're sleeping. Your muscles are oxygenated only at a minimal level. So you're asking them to do a really vigorous contraction when they have insufficient blood supply and circulation that, as Bill said in the beginning, have not warmed up. So if you try to stretch slowly and gently relaxing your muscles rather than tightening your muscles to reach out, you might find that more comfortable.
Okay, yeah. Great. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Lori Tyne Brody, senior physical therapist at the UW Sports Medicine Center, and Bill Boisenault, associate professor at the UW Medical School. Our guests today, I'm Larry Mueller, Jim Packard, our producer, and you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Physical therapy, the topic today with our two guests, Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for listening in. The number to call with your question is 1-800-642-1234. Or in Madison at 263-1890. And let's turn to Betty in Madison next. Betty, hello.
Hi. I'm calling because I have had a very long history of chronic back pain from about 2000. And for the first couple of years, I was not adequately treated with any kind of pain medication. And I ended up having a number of procedures. I had a discogram and then an IDET, which weren't helpful. And I ended up having a spinal fusion at L45S1 in 2002, followed by physical therapy, but never really fully recovered. It ended up having to stop work. I've been working with an acupuncturist, you know, weekly since then and doing as much as I can on my own with walking, but I still have a lot of back pain, sometimes debilitating where I'm not as active as I would like to be. Currently, I'm overall doing better as far as my strength because of the walking, but I want to start some kind of stretching. Just my flexibility in my back is so bad. I mean, the muscles are almost frozen. And I know that I need to go slow, but one of my concerns is I do take fairly high doses of pain medication, and people have said, you know, masking the symptoms of pain when you're trying to exercise is kind of a risky business because you don't know whether or not you might be, you know, hurting yourself. And so I'm in kind of a quandary as far as, you know, where to start, what to do, that kind of thing.
Right. Well, I'm glad you called, Betty. And there are some options out there for you. And I would think one of the places that might be a great place for you to begin your program, and it would complement your walking, is in the pool. The buoyancy of the water will take some pressure off the joints of your back, which will allow you to do more exercise with less stress or strain on your back. You can do some stretching in the water, and you can do a lot of core strengthening in the water, besides a little bit more of aerobic work as well. For people that I've seen with your history, and including the fusion, the water many times is a really good place to start, and then you can shift to more and more of a land-based program, and then eventually combining both a land-based and a water-based program.
Okay, not to say but I'm I don't drive any longer, and I'm not near anywhere where there's access to a pool.
Okay.
Plus, my disability income is so limited. I don't know where I would be able to do that kind of thing.
Okay.
So, I mean, I certainly people have suggested that, and so I, how do I go about, you know, getting to where I can do that?
Okay. Well, a couple of thoughts. So far, I'm striking out here, but we'll try again. You know, I don't know if there are some community services that you might be available to you, where there are shuttles or they can come pick you up and take you someplace. I mean, I don't know that.
Maybe I don't qualify. I've checked.
Okay. Okay. Well, then kind of plan C might be is, again, if you need some coaching here to help make sure you don't overdo things, as you mentioned.
Yeah.
You know, there are numbers of different types of videotapes out there that are designed for people with low back pain and a history similar to yours that would include some stretching and some gentle strengthening.
I did get a book for people who are in similar situations as mine.
Okay.
But I haven't really, gotten into it yet because I have some anxiety about making things worse.
Right, right.
Have you seen a physical therapist lately?
Not for some time.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I understand that you can't drive, but I would presume you have somebody who provides you transportation for, you know, shopping or things like that, that maybe one or two visits to a physical therapist to get instructed in the things to do and getting some of that coaching. And a lot of times we can follow up by phone. You know,
okay.
I have people who live a distance away and I can't see on a regular basis. And we follow up by phone to just check in and talk verbally about what to do next.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, so just, you know, talk to my internal medicine doctor and get a referral for physical therapy. Okay, that sounds like a plan.
Yeah, okay.
And Betty, when you go in, make sure the therapist understands that, you know, transportation is an issue for you and that your primary goal is to be set up on a program, a home program, and to see what kind of resources they can help provide you within the restraints that you have.
Okay. Right. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Betty.
Good luck. And Lynette in Madison, it's your turn. Hi, Lynette.
Hi there. I'm calling about my plantar fasciitis.
Okay.
And I've had it for probably 7 years. And I wear a night splint sometimes, and then I bought a Strasburg sock, and I wear that at times. And, I've cut back on my running. I have orthotics.
Mm-hmm.
I've done everything. I roll my calves with a foam roller. I stretch. It's just constant, and I think I'm getting actually a heel spur now. So I don't know what the next step is. Any suggestions?
Is it just one foot?
Both
feet.
One. I'm really feeling it on my right foot. The heel spur. Starting.
Okay. All right. And it's been 7 years.
Yeah, I was running. I trained for a marathon, and that's when I really felt it. And haven't run a marathon since, but
okay.
I do like to run.
Okay. How much are you running now?
Oh, I'm definitely less than 20 miles a week.
Okay. And it's still bothering you.
Mm-hmm.
And how is the rest of your day? What do you do in the rest of your day?
I'm on my feet all the time. I'm a fitness instructor, so I'm walking. I'm mainly walking and doing stuff like that.
Okay. And I presume you're wearing good shoes and all that for the rest of your day.
Yes, with orthotics.
With orthotics, okay.
Always. Yeah,
okay.
And I even have my Birkenstocks were made to my foot.
Okay.
So I wear those around the house.
Okay. All right.
I don't know what to do.
Boy, you know, you've done everything. I think the problem is you're on your feet so much.
All the time.
All day long.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just overload. They just can't keep up with it.
Right.
Are there times in between when you can sit, you know, or are you just up moving all the time?
Yeah, I'm pretty much up moving. I have three children running them around. And I don't know what to do next.
You know, there are some studies that talk about extracorporeal shockwave therapy for plantar fasciitis. Mm-hmm. And there are some people, there are a number of studies that have found favorable results with that. I've never seen anybody who has had it done. But there's quite a bit of literature out there on it.
What's it called again?
Extracorporeal shockwave therapy.
Mm.
It's not something I would normally advocate on this show, but for somebody who's done everything that they should do, I don't even know if anyone in town does it.
Well, I guess my question, like, if I were to see results wearing that night splint on mm-hmm. one leg and the foot and then my Strasburg sock on the other, mm-hmm. how consistent? I mean, you know, 30 days, 5 months?
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, if you're wearing it for 30 days, you should notice a difference.
Okay, then I will religiously do that because I'll do it for a week and then go.
Yeah, no, that's a week is insufficient. But okay. In 30 days, you should notice a difference.
And I'll make
so,
sure to do that.
Yeah.
And there was relief once when I did this ultrasound.
Okay.
Low level.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that all of a sudden I was like, yes, that finally worked. But I can't do that. You know, it was very expensive. And
mm-hmm.
I wanted to buy one of those.
You don't have insurance?
Well, we do, but my husband just started his own job, so it's not very...
Right. Got it.
Yeah.
Got it.
Gotcha.
Got it. Yeah. So, then try the things that you have there, you know, the massage kind of stuff. And
someone had mentioned, like, there's lack of blood supply there, so I have these little pokey balls that I stand on.
Mm-hmm.
And then, because for a while there, it was thought that it was, like, where the calf attaches to the... tendon.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been massaging there, and I guess I have great ankle flexion.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering.
Yeah, it's not just ankle; it's your toes. It's your toe flexion. How your toes should be able to come up, basically perpendicular to the floor. It's less about your calf and more about your toes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
I'll work on that.
Yeah, yeah. So stretch your toes up.
Okay.
See how you do.
Yeah, thank you.
All right.
Thanks.
Good luck.
Good luck. Thank you.
Call us back in 30 days and let us know how you're doing.
Absolutely. You'll be on in about 30 days.
Exactly. That's
yes,
what I'm saying.
That's
we'll
exactly.
see how that's worked. Yeah.
Mary in Eau Claire, it's your turn. Hi, Mary. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I'll try to make this real quick. It's kind of a long story, but I'll condense it a lot. About 5 weeks ago, after going for a 2-mile run, I had a lot of pain in my right hip leg area, upper leg area. And I just put up with that for a while, but it got worse. And so I finally called for an appointment because when I got up from a sitting position, I had shooting pain going through the hip and upper leg and couldn't put weight on my leg for a few steps. And once I got going, I was, you know, fine and I could do most everything. But it was just getting up from that position. So anyway, I had to wait a couple of weeks to get an appointment, so I finally got in, and they took a couple x-rays of my hip and pelvic area, and that seemed to be fine, and the doctor checked my flexibility and reflexes, which are all good, and you know I can move every other direction and move fine and so on. He did mention the piriformis muscle or possibly bursitis. But he didn't really offer any immediate help or suggestions about what to do about that. All he wanted to do was more x-rays on further down on my leg and maybe a bone scan and all that, even though, you know, he didn't think that's what it was. And I balked at that partly because I had to pay for it and I didn't want to put that expense into it.
Right.
He mentioned physical therapy. I finally consented to make an appointment for that, and I had to wait another 2 weeks for that. In the meantime, I went online to look up some information about the piriformis, and that's what it seemed to be in my experience and what I could find about it. So I just started doing some exercises on my own, and I've been getting progressively better all the time, and it's to the point now where I can almost stand up without having to have pain and get my bearings before I get going.
Good. Mary, have you run in the last 2-3 weeks?
Oh, no, okay. Not since that time at all.
Okay, good.
No, I've just been walking and doing just normal things.
Good, and the walking is going okay?
Yeah, that hurts a little bit, so I don't do that even a lot.
All right.
But I do gardening and stuff. So I'm just...
Well, it's a good sign that getting up out of the sitting position has gotten so much better for you, and there's no reason why to think it won't continue to get better.
Right, that's what I was wondering, if it's something that I can eventually work through here with these exercises.
I would think so, especially a 5-week time frame is a relatively short period of time,
okay,
as opposed to 5 months or,
okay,
you know, 2 years. But having said that, it still wouldn't hurt to keep your physical therapy appointment, even just for one visit, to have them examine you and see if there's exercises they can give you to help prevent this from coming back again.
Mm-hmm.
They may also be able to help sort out with you, what was it? You know, was it, in fact, the piriformis?
Mm-hmm.
What could have been some sort of a tendonitis or bursitis that developed as well?
Mm-hmm.
And also take in your footwear. So they can look at whatever your shoes you're running in or walking in, because there may be some suggestions they can make there, again, to help keep this from coming back.
Mm-hmm. I know I need to change that, so that was one of the factors.
Yeah, you bet.
And I've just been kind of putting off going to physical therapy, too, because that's another $300, because they won't do it for less than 1 hour for the first visit. So, like I say, I'm paying all
mm-hmm.
this. So.
Yeah.
Well, I tell you what, if you go in, I would come in with a very specific list of goals that you have for that visit. I mean, they should examine you.
Right.
But make it clear up front why you're in there.
Right.
And let them know that you are doing better and you're looking for some information related to preventing this from coming back
okay.
again.
Okay.
And really kind of looking long term with this.
Uh-huh. Okay, great. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, Mary. Thank you very much for calling. And Chris in Oconomowoc, your turn next. Hi, Chris.
Hi. Thanks for the call.
Mm-hmm.
The reason I'm calling, well, let me sum up. I've had an experience in my right elbow for the past 3 to 4 years. I consider it a tennis elbow. And three or four years ago, my brother said, well, why don't you wear a brace? Bought a brace at Walgreens, put it on my forearm, and it enabled me to play golf. I don't play tennis. Maybe I should call it golfer's elbow. But enabled me to play golf, which I do enjoy quite a bit. And I used to bowl as well. But I'd have to wear it when I bowled. If I didn't bowl, it'd really act up, and I couldn't throw the ball down the alley. So gave up bowling, rather golf. This past month. My son was out in our backyard hitting golf balls. We live on a lake, and he's hitting golf balls into the lake. And I thought, well, I'll join him. I didn't put the brace on. And when I swung, first time I swung the club, I didn't warm up properly, and I did everything wrong. It felt like someone took my arm and ripped it out from the elbow.
Yeah.
And now I'm trying to think. I've been afraid to even swing a club, or even throw a ball, for that matter, for fear of aggravating it.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had a lot of people advise me, from everything from holistic healers to deep massage therapy to a regular MD. I'm just wondering, what is my best bet? What do you surmise from this?
Is that on the inside of your elbow or the outside?
On the inside.
Inside. That is technically golfer's elbow.
It is.
Just so you know.
Okay.
Yeah.
I never heard of it before.
Yeah. Tennis elbow's on the outside, golfer's elbow on the inside. So
okay.
So you've appropriately named it for
hey,
us.
Hey, how about that?
Are you getting any numbness or tingling or anything like that?
No. When I aggravated about a month ago, it was I couldn't even raise my arm without pain.
Okay. All right.
Now that has subsided.
Okay.
And I'm just kind of, I'm really leery about, I don't want to go through surgery, but can I do this through some type of therapy?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah. Right. Yeah, the reason I was asking about the numbness or tingling is there's a nerve that passes on the inside of your elbow, which makes golfer's elbow a little bit trickier than tennis elbow, where there's not a major nerve that passes close to that area. But typically, the golfer's elbow is a tendinosis or degeneration of a tendon that actually flexes your wrist. So if you think about your golf swing and the wrist flexion that occurs with that, as well as the movement towards your little finger, that's the tendon that does that. So it's basically degeneration of that tendon and an overuse problem. So it can be rehabilitated and approached from that perspective. So, you know, given that you manage for 3 or 4 years with just the strap, with no other kind of therapy or intervention, hopefully you can recover from this too. And in fact, I don't know if I should say this on the air, but sometimes going through that injury where you initiate the healing cascade, sometimes that can actually help you get over it. So I would go in and I'd see somebody, see a physical therapist. If you need to go to your doctor first, if your insurance requires that, do that and get in a good rehabilitation program, because this is your window. It's still, I guess it's May now. you know, golf season is here. So you need some help now to get over this. And you should be able to recover from this with therapy.
Okay, great. Great. I appreciate that. So see a doctor first, then go for physical therapy.
Yeah.
And then what was the second thing? Overuse? So in other
words? Yeah, it's an overuse. It's typically a tendinosis.
So maybe I should swing less, huh?
Swing
at this
fewer,
point, yeah.
Yeah, make fewer
at this
shots.
Point now.
Get closer to par.
Yeah, there you go.
You know, Chris, I'll be playing in a golf tournament next week in Canada, and I'll be hitting, we'll be playing about 144 holes, I think.
Wow.
Over the course of the week, so maybe I'll be joining you.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I'll email you which bar I'm at.
Yeah, okay? Exactly. You know, but in the meantime, you should do a little bit of stretching. You know, with your arm straight out in front of you and your palm up, bring your fingers towards the floor to do some gentle stretching and some gentle gripping exercises. Very gentle, just to kind of start working that area a little bit.
Okay, I appreciate that.
Thanks, Chris.
All right, you have a great day.
Good luck.
You too. Thanks a lot for calling. Laurie Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault, our guests. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking physical fitness today with Laurie Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault. Glad to have you listening in. Lots of people online, but there's an open line at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison, 263-1890. Deborah in Barron, you're next. Hi, Deb.
Hi. Yeah, I've got last fall I was diagnosed with a benign fat tumor in my spinal cord in the lumbar region.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering, is there anything I can do to try to help increase my, I'm not sure what I'm asking. I try to walk and it hurts, and I try to do exercise and it sends pain different directions all over the place.
Okay.
They've got me on painkillers, and as far as removal, the neurosurgeon said that the operation was possible, but the side effects were just, you know, the possibility of damaging me further was greater than that.
Oh. Okay, so the fat tumor is still in yet?
Yes, it's in the lumbar. It's in the lumbar region. It's basically almost the full lumbar region. It's maybe one or two shy of the whole thing.
Okay, and it's in around the spinal cord?
It's in the spinal cord. Yes.
Okay. All right. Deborah, have you seen a physical therapist along the way?
Yes, I have.
Okay, and have they? What are the kind of things that they tried with you?
Just a little bit of stretching the legs and the back a little bit.
Okay. How about in the pool? Have you done anything in the pool for exercise?
No, I don't have a pool.
Okay. All right. Well, I understand why the stretching the legs to help mobilize the area in the back where that tumor is, which can help make bending and twisting and walking more comfortable.
It also aggravates it when I do it.
Yeah, well, I understand. There's a really fine line between overdoing it, doing as much as possible, but not overdoing it, because you're stretching the nerve tissue a bit when you do those stretches. And they need to be stretched out, but nerves are pretty sensitive structures. Are you able to do anything for conditioning?
Not at this moment. I've been kind of, like I said, every time I try to do something, I end up in pain and down for 2 or 3 days.
Yeah, okay.
So, and I'm really tired of pain pills.
Right.
Yeah.
I have no other option right now. So.
Okay. All right. Well, when was the last time you saw the physical therapist?
It was in January, I think, was the last time I went.
Okay. Well, the only thing I can recommend is if you went to one therapist, is maybe go for a second opinion for another physical therapist who specializes in working with people with back pain.
Okay.
And see if they can cope with anything differently than what you've received in the past. It sounds like the stretching that they had to do with your legs was a reasonable place to start.
Yeah.
But I guess that would be my recommendation at this point from a physical therapy standpoint.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Deb. Thank you very much for calling. And Brian in Oshkosh, we turn to you now. Hi, Brian.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
All right, I'm a 40-year-old male, and last Wednesday I was kind of lifting a ladder off the top of my work truck, kind of uneven ground, and my right leg just hurt like a dickens. Like, it felt like somebody shot me with a slingshot or something.
Mm.
And extreme pain. I really couldn't use a leg for a couple of days, even moving the foot on the accelerator, bending my leg or anything. But a couple months ago, I had sciatica, and I thought it might be acting up again. But it wasn't my back, just a leg. And my wife noticed Saturday a huge bruise. I can't really see on the back of my leg. A good starting at the kneecap, maybe 6 inches down and 6 inches up on the back of my thigh. Nothing hit me, but I got this huge, huge bruise. And it kind of felt like something popped or snapped when it happened. I was kind of lifting up. Something I do 100 times a day almost.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure why the bruise or what gave or what happened.
Pop a vessel or something?
Probably tore a muscle would be my guess. And if it's in the back, I'm guessing you probably tore one of your hamstring muscles, which would account for your feeling like it was maybe sciatica because it goes down the back of your leg.
Right. It was a similar feeling to before, but the back wasn't involved.
And I can see why it would hurt to move your knee because your hamstrings are your primary knee flexors.
Right.
And even pressing your foot on the accelerator when you pulled up, it probably pulled up on the fascia that holds your hamstring.
Right.
So you probably need to go in and see somebody, have them take a look at that. If you have that much bruising on the back, that was a pretty bad tear. And just take a look and verify that that is indeed what happened.
Okay.
You know, the good news is that it's probably not your knee joint itself, even though that's where the bruising is.
Right.
Because if you injure something inside your knee, the joint capsule holds all that bleeding inside the capsule, and you don't see it underneath your skin unless you've totally blown out your entire knee. And that wasn't a big enough trauma to blow out your knee. I mean, those are huge, high-velocity kinds of injuries. So my best guess is that you tore a hamstring muscle.
Is this something that's easily repaired, or is it something that they can just...
No, it'd be treated conservatively, but you should... they can take a long time to heal. So getting some guidance about stretching and strengthening exercises would be really useful for you, especially if you climb ladders for a living.
I do.
You don't want to be up on a ladder and have your leg give out.
No, not at all.
Yeah. Okay. So, I'd get some guidance about rehabbing that thing.
Excellent. I did make a doctor's appointment looked in the mirrors and saw the bruising that the wife saw. I looked immediately after it happened to see if somebody actually did shoot me with something.
Yeah.
It was immediate from nothing to lots of pain. But hamstring. Okay.
Yeah. All right.
Thank you very
much.
You betcha.
Yeah. Good luck.
Good luck. Thanks a lot for calling. Painful experience, those hamstring.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Andrea and Madison. Your turn. Hi.
I'm 21 years old, and I've had a history of herniated discs since I was probably like 12. I did gymnastics, and I was in circus school. But then last summer, I bent over, and I can't even describe the type of pain that I experienced. I literally fell to the ground, and I couldn't move, and I felt like I couldn't feel my legs at all. And the doctor came and didn't want to move me because he thought that my back might be broken because of the extreme pain I was in. He touched my legs, and I couldn't feel them at all. And then I urinated blood, which was strange, so they thought I might have kidney stones. So they did an MRI, and I didn't have that.
Okay.
And then recently they found that I tore my disc. So I don't know what to do. It's been almost a year now, and I'm a yoga instructor. I've stopped doing yoga. I'm actually hypermobile, which I think makes the healing process more difficult, because they told me I shouldn't stretch as much as somebody with my injury normally should because I'm hypermobile. So I'm really at a loss of what to do. I've gotten like 4 epidurals, and I'm on painkillers. But at 21 years old, I'd really like to be more active.
Yeah, you bet.
So I'm really kind of at a loss as to what to do.
So, Angie, I'm assuming that the sensation came back in your legs. Is that correct?
Excuse me?
I'm assuming the sensation came back in your legs. You mentioned your legs went numb.
It did in about 2 days, but I literally couldn't walk for a month.
Okay.
I couldn't even get out of bed to go to the bathroom for a week.
Oh.
Okay.
So they were injecting me with all sorts of things. Unfortunately, that happened in Mexico while I was on vacation. So then I had to wait about 2 months before I could go on a plane because I literally could. Yeah, it was terrible. I literally could not move for at least 2 weeks. And then I could, someone would carry me to the couch and lay me down, and I could do that. But I couldn't be in a sitting position. I could only either lay down or stand up.
Right. Yeah, that's classic for certain types of disc injuries.
Yeah.
For someone who is very, very flexible, it doesn't mean that they shouldn't be stretching, but you have to be very careful how you do stretch.
Okay.
But stabilization, trunk and hip stabilization is crucial in terms of you need more strengthening than someone who is designed a little differently. It may not be quite as flexible.
Right.
And again, there are very safe ways to exercise to gain this trunk stabilization that I'm assuming that you're needing. And there's times also a back support can be helpful as kind of a transition into a little more aggressive of an exercise program. Have you seen a physical therapist along the way?
I have. And actually, some people were suggesting surgery, but there were some doctors said I should get it, and then other doctors said that since I'm only 21, it might help short-term, but it could create more problems long-term.
Right.
Yep.
Right.
So at my age, it's kind of not the most...
Not what you want to do.
Right.
Exactly.
Right. Well, when you've seen when was the last time you saw a physical therapist?
About 2 months ago.
Okay.
And he basically told me that it's up to me. He said I could keep doing getting epidurals every month, which I don't really want to do because I feel like that just masks the pain. It doesn't really change anything.
Okay. Are you doing any kind of strengthening right now, exercises?
I've been walking, but I tried to do yoga again about 2 weeks ago, and I know how to modify the poses, and I was bending my knees a lot every time I bent forward, and I still hurt my back to the point where I could hardly walk for about a week after that.
The kind of exercises I'm talking about are very different than what you're describing, the walking or the yoga. I mean, certainly yoga can help with postural control, but, you know, trunk stabilization, it's a category of exercises.
Okay.
And they can start at very low level, and you can work at being very aggressive, working with an exercise ball, a physio ball, and using foam rollers. And for someone who wants to be active like yourself, that's the direction that you need to go in.
Okay.
So I'd either recommend giving a physical therapist a call you saw in the past or going to someone differently, but going in with the idea that you want a program designed toward trunk stability.
Okay, trunk stability.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Mm-hmm. All right. Good luck.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, good luck.
Thanks,
good luck.
Andrea. Mm-hmm. Appreciate your call. Wow. Lots of tough issues going on.
There's never a good time or place to get injured, but out of the country is not a, That's a very tough situation.
Kevin in Madison, your turn. Hi, Kevin.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Thank you for calling.
Thank you for taking my call. About a month ago, I was climbing off the roof on a ladder, and I pulled something in my sternum, and this keeps reoccurring. It's almost a real sharp stabbing pain, and it seems to be getting worse.
Whereabouts in your sternum? High, low?
Right about in the middle.
Right about in the middle. Okay, so it's not close to your collarbone.
No.
Okay. All right. Well, you have little joints where your ribs attach to your sternum. And those are joints just like your knee joint and your toe joint and your shoulder joint and your finger joints. Those are joints just the same. And they can be injured just like any other joint can. Now, they're not stressed in the same way that other joints are, like carrying your body around. But they still can get stressed, particularly with certain kinds of lifting movements. And my guess is that you damaged... and injured one of those joints. And you can actually get a chronic condition there called costochondritis, where you get an inflammation of one of those little joints, and people often show up in the emergency room thinking they're having a heart attack because they have chest pain. and it's actually costochondritis. So I would check with your doctor and just verify that that is indeed what's going on. But that's the most likely scenario. And
would you feel that on both sides then?
Only if you damaged it on both sides. You know, it's like if you twisted one knee, you're only going to feel it in that one knee. So you could feel it on one side or both sides, depending upon how the injury occurred. But verify that diagnosis, and then you can do some strengthening exercises for the muscles that attach in that area. There's a bunch of little muscles between your ribs. They can do some breathing kinds of exercises, as well as some strengthening exercises for your chest muscles to try to stabilize that area. Yeah.
Okay.
And Kevin, another thing that might help is you can get a rib binder.
Yeah.
Especially to help, you know, all the things that Lori mentioned are important to do, but if you need to be working and need to be active, a rib binder can help protect that area.
Okay.
And again, just give it a chance to settle down and heal a little faster.
That's a good suggestion.
Yep, give that a shot.
All right, a rib binder then?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Rib binder, just like the quarterbacks wear, right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. That sounds good then.
All right.
All right. Good luck, Kevin.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Lori Tyne-Brody, our guest, senior physical therapist at the UW Sports Medicine Center, and Bill Boisenault, associate professor at the University of Wisconsin Medical School, our guests here, and will be with us right up till 12:30 on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Dealing with all kinds of physical therapy issues today, some really tough ones with Lori Tyne-Brody and Bill Boisenault. Lori, senior physical therapist at UW Sports Medicine Center, Bill at the UW Medical School. Glad to have you listening in. Maybe you've got a question about something that's been bothering you in the way of your physical nature. And I'll tell you what, lots of people online with questions. Patrick has wonders about copper bracelets, I believe. Colette has some arthritis in the neck to deal with. Debbie's got some ACL reconstruction to do. Bill's got some wonders about some appliances for treating plantar fasciitis. So there are a number of good questions out there, and we'll be taking all those, and we'll take yours too. Give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. Or if you're in Madison at 263-1890. And we'll be back with Bill and Lori right after this look at the news. Talking aches and pains and sprains and strains with our two guests, Lori Tyne-Brody of the UW Sports Medicine Center and Bill Boisenault of the UW Medical School. Glad to have you listening in. There is one open line. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890, and we turn to Patrick in Chippewa Falls next. Hi, Patrick. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Larry, Lori, Bill.
Hello.
So, in regards to the golfing elbow you were talking about earlier,
Yeah,
I had that problem a few years back and had it for quite a long time. And a friend of mine mentioned trying a copper bracelet.
Uh-huh.
I put the thing on, and 3 hours later, I had no pain.
Wow. That's pretty remarkable. You just put it around your wrist?
Yes.
Huh.
And have not had any pain since.
Beautiful.
That's been like 10 years ago.
Amazing.
Davis Love, I think, wears one, too.
I wear a magnetic bracelet now and you know, do the glucosamine and that sort of thing, but I was amazed. I was in pain for a year, and within 3 hours, it was gone.
Do we have any research? Well, here we have some, Patrick saying that it worked for him. Do we have any research on this?
No.
Yeah, I'm not aware of it.
I know other golfers wear copper bracelets.
Yeah. And I'm not aware that it caused any problems.
No. I don't see any downside to it. So,
right.
If it works, that's great. I mean, if it helps one person, two person, 10 people.
You know? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, it was the right ticket for you, Patrick, which is great.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I'm sure it probably doesn't work for it. Maybe it's chemical makeup or something, but it certainly worked for me, and I just thought I'd let you know.
Well, thanks, Pat.
Yeah, there's just a tremendous amount that we don't understand about how the body works and individual differences. You know, so often we try to apply research to a broad base of people, and some people it works, some people it doesn't, and there's always that factor that we don't understand the individual differences.
So appreciate the call. Thank you very much, Patrick. And Bill in Madison, I believe it's your turn next, so we'll go to you. Hi, Bill.
Hi, I'm enjoying the show. So I have a brief question about plantar fasciitis. You guys mentioned some sort of sock earlier. I'm wondering if that's available without prescriptions and what the name is.
Yep. The woman earlier talked about it. I can't remember which one. But anyway, she talked about the Strasburg sock. And if you just Google plantar fasciitis and braces, you'll find there are a number of varieties out there. One of them is called the Strasburg sock, and basically it's a sock that you slip on over your foot, and it has a place where it attaches from your toes up to the top of your calf, so it pulls your foot up into a flex position, your foot and toes. Then there's other kinds of rigid splints. The category is called night splints. They're splints you wear at night. And the idea is to put your foot in the plantar fascia on a gentle stretch. And I can't overemphasize the word gentle. You're not trying to crank it all the way up, or you're going to give yourself Achilles tendonitis or cut off your circulation or make yourself terribly uncomfortable. It should just keep your toes from going down into a pointed position at night. That's the usual resting position with our toes pointed down. So we want to pull it up a little bit and put a little bit of a prolonged stretch on it. But yes, you can order them over the internet. You can probably get them at some of the drug stores.
So you don't want to get them too tight either, that they will cut circulation.
No. That'll cause more problems than you already have.
Yeah. Too much of a good thing is not a good thing.
Yeah.
Thanks, Bill.
Lynette, that's who it was.
Thanks very much for calling. Debbie in Milwaukee, we turn to you now. Hi, Deb.
Hi. I had ACL reconstruction surgery about 4 weeks ago,
mm-hmm.
and still not achieving a 90-degree bend, having mm-hmm. a lot of problem with the bend. So I guess looking for some ideas for exercises, as well as just thoughts on helping with the ankle swelling as well.
You're still having swelling in your ankle?
Yeah.
So when
I'm up and about walking around a lot towards the end of the day, then there's a lot of swelling in the ankle and the foot.
Did you have anything besides the ACL reconstruction, meniscus tear, meniscus repair?
No, just they took the piece from, the patella, rebuilt or reconstructed the ACL.
Okay. And when you try to flex your knee past 90, what are you feeling and where are you feeling it?
Oh, I can't even get to 90. I'm at about 70.
Okay. And what do you feel?
A lot of pressure on the upper part of the knee.
Okay.
A lot of pain.
Okay. All right. And I presume you're working with a physical therapist?
Yeah, two times a week.
Two times a week. And what are they saying?
They're just helping to bend, to stretch it out, see the doctor again at the end of the month. And then, if I'm not there, we're going to be looking at other options.
Right. And can you get it all the way straight?
With all the stretching I've been doing over the last couple of days, it's really hard to get it straight now. After the surgery, it was real easy to get it straight. Now it's hard to push it straight.
Okay. All right. Getting it straight is the most important direction to go. So I wouldn't work on bending it if it's at the expense of straightening it. Okay, because having an inability to straighten your knee has a much worse long-term prognosis than not being able to bend it. And if they need to go in and do a second procedure to regain motion, it's much easier to regain the bending than it is to gain straightening. So that's the first, most important piece of advice I can give you. Don't work so hard on bending that you lose your straightening. Keep the straightening. And work on your quadricep setting. Can you tighten your quadriceps, your kneecap?
Yes.
Okay, and you can do that well and lift your leg up straight without a lag in your knee?
And that's where with the knee not being as straight as it was right after the surgery, it is a little harder to do the straight leg lift.
Okay, I'd work on those because where you describe your tightness is in the area of your kneecap, and you can get some fibrosis around your kneecap and above your kneecap that prevents your kneecap from gliding upwards, and that's going to limit your motion in both directions. So I'd work really hard on my quadricep sets and straight leg raises, getting my knee straight, and then just kind of keep working on your knee flexion as you can. What I find works best is a little bit of traction with flexion. That is pulling down on it to gap the knee a little bit and then flexing some. But I'd work on your straightening and keep in PT.
Okay, great. Thank you.
All right.
Yep, thanks, Deb. Colette in River Falls. Hi to you.
Hello. Are you there?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. I'm trying to get, or I've got a referral to a physical therapist for the first time for a arthritis in my neck. They told me I have bone spurs. And being it's in the bone, I've got two questions. How much can physical therapy help, and can it prevent it from getting worse? My brother had a similar situation, and they finally had to go in and do major surgery and clean out his fuse his neck and clean out his spinal column because his hands are going numb. Right. And I don't want that to happen to me.
No, exactly.
Will physical therapy help prevent that?
Well, the physical therapy can help slow down the degeneration. Will it stop it completely? I don't think anybody can really tell you that for sure, but it can certainly slow it down. And it'll slow it down by making sure you have good flexibility all around the area where the bone spurs are. So that includes your upper back, your shoulders, as well as your upper neck, and then a lot of good strengthening and stabilization in that same area. A lot of people have bone spurs and don't know they have it. So the fact you have the bone spurs they found doesn't mean you're doomed to have surgery down the road. It just means that anatomically that it's not going to be normal. And you could be...
It hurts all the time. At night, it keeps me awake because, you know, you can't get a comfortable position.
Right. Well, hopefully what the physical therapist can do with you is maybe give you some suggestions in terms of type of pillows to use, sleeping positions to help facilitate that. Also, the hope would be that with some stretching and strengthening that you are much more comfortable, you can get comfortable at night and stay more comfortable. So I would bring in your list of things you're having trouble with, including the sleeping and anything else during day-to-day activities that are particularly bothersome, and a physical therapist should help work through that with you. But a really good exercise program and also probably some manual therapy to your upper back and shoulders in particular could help take some stress off that area where the bone spurs are. So again, a lot of people have bone spurs and have no symptoms. They don't know that they're in there. The fact you have them doesn't mean you're doomed to have surgery down the road, but you need to compensate for what has happened there with that degeneration. And they should be able to help you with that.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks, Colette. And Leonard in Minocqua, your turn. Hi, Len.
Hi. I have a similar problem, but I also have – I got two questions. And I get severe cramps and spasms in my inside of my thighs when I'm on my feet for a long period of time. And I read in the paper about a Dr. Donahue said that low calcium levels can cause muscle spasms. The thing is, my doctor never mentioned to me about how low my calcium is, and I needed to hope that this can help me by correcting it. The other problem is similar to the lady in front of me. I have a bone spur that's growing into my esophagus, and it's causing me to I'm not able to swallow at certain times, and the minute it stops, then excessive amounts of saliva builds up where I can almost regurgitate a half a cup of it, and I sometimes can't breathe for 10 minutes. I breathe through my nose, but I can't swallow, and then eventually if I try to relax calmly, it'll go away. Those are my two big problems. Yeah. If I could be helped on somebody that can answer my questions and go to somebody to review this.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, in terms of the cramping in the thighs, inside the thighs, and there can be some mineral deficits, calcium deficits that can lead to changes in muscles and muscles cramping on folks. And so some blood tests would help them figure that out to decide if, in fact, that's the problem or not. You can get that kind of cramping for lots of reasons. It can be related to blood flow as well as things like the calcium and mineral deficit. So if you haven't seen your physician to sort all that out, that's who I would go see and make sure that those kinds of tests are run. In terms of the esophagus and the swallowing, yes, bone spurs, you know, usually they cause problems when the spurs are angled toward the back, because that's where they press on the nerves. But up in the neck, if the bone spurs are toward the front, they can interfere with the esophagus, and that swallowing is in fact the big problem. Sometimes if people have some severe postural issues with the head and neck area, what we call a significant forward head posture, by doing some stretching, it can actually give more space to the esophagus and make swallowing easier. So it just depends on how much of a postural issue could be associated with the up in that head and neck area. Otherwise, I'm not sure that PT could really help you other than that.
I'm past 70, and he told me that it would take a major surgery to correct that. I try to eat slowly in small bites, but sometimes you get excessive, you know, you get excited and
sure.
you just swallow big chunks, and that's what causes it. Yeah. But he never mentioned to me about the calcium level, and I wish that I could be, told about that in the blood test. And I do have other blood tests for sugar and cholesterol and so forth.
Okay.
Yeah, so get the mineral test, mm-hmm. I guess.
Right. Well, I guess make sure that they understand the kind of problems you're having down in your legs with the cramping. I mean, it could be related to blood flow. It could be related to lots of things. It could be related to your neck, possibly, depending mm-hmm. if there's bone spurs, you know, pointing more toward the back than the front. So I guess, Leonard, it's just making it clear to the physician that the cramping is severe and interfering. And just to clarify with them, have they done all the tests that might explain the cramping to you?
Mm-hmm.
Good luck, Leonard. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Janet in Madison, we'll turn to you next. Hi, Janet.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is about my kneecap. I'm a 40-year-old female and active, working out-wise. And just lately, probably the last 2 weeks, I've noticed almost a feeling like a bruise. If you were to take your thumb, if you're seated, and run it down the top of your quad until you get to the top of your top edge of your patella, it feels like a bruise.
Mm-hmm.
And yet there's no bruising to it. And I don't notice or remember any kind of trauma to it.
Mm-hmm.
I also notice pain when I'm doing lunges, for example. I notice it in both cases where it's the front knee and the back knee. Maybe mm-hmm. when it's the back knee, it's even worse.
Mm-hmm.
So my question is it some sort of tendonitis? Is it really potentially a bruise, even though I don't remember trauma to it?
Is it both knees?
No, just the one, just my right knee.
Okay. It's probably a tendonitis. It's at the bottom end of your kneecap. It's called patellar tendonitis. At the top end, it's called quadriceps tendonitis. And it's where your four quadriceps muscles converge at the top aspect of your patella. That's the most likely thing going on there. I mean, there's a couple other tissues there, but it sounds pretty clearly like a musculotendinous issue, and it may be that you've just overdone it, particularly with the lunges. So what you may need to do is back off on the lunges a bit. You may find that if you modify how deep you go or the position of your shin when you do it, that it doesn't hurt. So you need to be able to do the lunges without pain and add in some quadriceps stretching if you haven't already, and maybe some local icing to the area. And see how that does.
Okay.
And so a tendonitis would feels
just like a bruise, but you can't see anything. Yep.
Okay. I'll give that a try. Thank you very
much.
Yeah, thanks, Janet. And Michael in Black River Falls, hi to you.
Hey, how you doing? So, yes, I have a question. I guess you answered some of it with the previous call about cramping. Well, I'm 5'6", 300 pounds. I was. Now, as 4 months later, I'm 5'6". 250 because I lost weight getting back into shape, and now I'm tending to cramp up real bad in my calves, and I'm doing the what I'm supposed to do, I'm getting deep tissue massages and staying active and all that. I'm just curious what causes cramping and how do you get rid of it, or I'm confused there, if you can explain
it. Sure.
Well, do you have any other medical issues, diabetes, heart disease?
No. No, I don't. I got lucky with that. It runs in my family, but I know I have. I just I got lucky with that. No, I don't. I'm pretty much fit. Just blood pressure just a little high. That's about it.
Okay.
Otherwise, I changed my life around completely, and I mean, as I started, it wasn't bad, but now I'm losing weight. It's just, you know, I'm just curious. Do I have to get my body acclimated, you know, back into getting in shape or reform? I'm just confused.
When do they cramp? Do they cramp when you're exercising? Do they cramp during the night?
Cramp when I'm exercising, and yes, definitely when definitely more like when I play basketball outside, and when I swim, when I'm using the muscles the most.
Okay. Usually, that's because of a lack of circulation to the area. When you're exercising a muscle, there's certain waste products that need to be taken away, and the muscles need new oxygen to refresh them. So for some reason, that's not happening. So sometimes we look for metabolic problems like diabetes or circulation or heart disease, where it might interfere with the body's ability to bring the blood flow in and take the waste products away. Sometimes it's, as Bill mentioned, a chemical imbalance, a lack of potassium, or a lack of water. So you can get cramping from having insufficient hydration, particularly when you're exercising. So pre-hydrating before you exercise, making sure, especially if you're exercising outside and it's hot, that you're getting enough fluid, it's a good idea. Then there's also the other side of that coin, which is overhydrating. And sometimes people can overhydrate and essentially deplete their body of the essential, you know, minerals and salts and so on that they need for appropriate muscle contraction. So that can cause problems also. So there's sort of an optimal amount of hydration. But making sure you're getting enough potassium in your diet, bananas, ketchup, potatoes, things like that, is important. And doing some calf stretching and see how you do.
Oh, okay. So as I lose the weight and get down, you know, I'm just curious, as I'm losing the weight and everything, is my body reforming itself, and does that have something to do with it? I mean, will it go away?
I expect it might go away. It may be due to your heavy weight also, that you're putting a lot of weight on your calves. You're asking them to lift and move a lot of mass, especially in something like basketball, where you're asking them not only to lift that mass, but to control it when it lands again. That puts a tremendous amount of strain on your calves. And so they may just be overworked.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
As you get in better shape, that should go away.
Yeah. Good luck and congratulations on your progress.
Keep up the good work. Keep up the good work.
No, I appreciate it. You just got to do it. I don't want to be a statistic, but
yeah, well,
that's right.
That's exactly right.
Be a good statistic.
That's right.
Yeah, we want to keep you around here on Wisconsin Public Radio, listening in. Thanks, Michael. Joey in Minneapolis. Your turn. Hi, Joey.
Hi. I believe I have arthritis. My dad's always had it. My grandmother's had it. My knees and my ankles, every once in a while when there's a dramatic weather change, they'll swell up.
Mm-hmm.
And also my wrists, every once in a while, they'll hurt.
Mm-hmm. How old are you, Joey?
21.
Okay. Have you ever had anyone check this out?
No, I haven't.
Okay. I would go in and see somebody about that. Arthritis can fall into two main categories, sort of that overuse wear and tear arthritis called osteoarthritis. There's another classification of arthritises that are commonly referred to as rheumatic arthritises, and those tend to be more systemic, can be more hereditary, and they tend to affect more joints. For osteoarthritis, you can usually point to an incident like, the old football injury, and that's why this knee bothers me. But when you're getting both knees, both ankles and wrists, and you're getting swelling, you're looking for a systemic cause. So I'd go in. They can do a simple blood test, look at some of your blood levels of titers and so on, and see if you are leaning toward that. And then you really should be followed sort of with a joint protection philosophy in mind, so that you learn to protect your joints so that you can use them for the rest of your life without a lot of symptoms. So I would go in and see my family practice doctor to start with and tell her or him of those complaints and just get it evaluated.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call very much. And I wish we had more time.
We all do, don't we?
Oh, Lori, thank you. Bill, thank you so much for being
pleasure
with us.
Pleasure as always.
You bet.
And you folks are going to be back on June 11th, if
indeed,
I'm not.
Indeed, God willing.
Correct.
June 11th, they will be back. Lori Tyne Brody is a senior physical therapist at the UW Sports Medicine Center, and Bill Boisenault is an associate professor who teaches at the UW Medical School, and they come by every month to talk about aches and pains and sprains and strains, and we'll do it again with them next month on June 11th. Just to let you know what's coming up tomorrow, photography is on our minds a little bit, or at least cameras. Brian Carlos of the Camera Company will be stopping by to talk about cameras and photography, so we'll look forward to that. And then following Brian, we'll take a look at your teeth with Dr. Lowell Lackritz, Madison dentist, who has always has great advice on dental care. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.